Hello, and welcome to SLP Full Disclosure. I am your host, Jennifer Martin. And listeners, I'm so happy that you're here today. And I feel like spring is often a time where it's just change, new beginnings. This was always the time of my career, no matter what I was doing, where as we were coming out of the slog of winter, I'd start to think, what do I want to do with my life? Like, what do I want to be when I grow up? What setting do I want to go to? What do I want to do? And I don't know about you all, but I would often have just this wave of burnout around this time. And not every year, but if I was going to, it was kind of around this time of the year. And start thinking, what else should I do? Or should I just save all of my money and continue to buy lottery tickets? But that never panned out. So today, I want to talk to you all about a setting that I know that you're all familiar with, but perhaps certain things that you don't know about, or you may have thought about doing it but aren't sure. And just to kind of put it out there, because oftentimes what I found was when I would have that feeling of burnout and just what do I want to do, it really was just a matter of changing something. And sometimes it would be a little change, but sometimes it needed to be a big change and a setting change or a population change. So today I want to talk to you all about working in early intervention. And really this episode is for, of course, anybody. And we want everybody to listen, but also if you are currently in early intervention, if you're new to early intervention, or if it's just one of those settings that you've thought, I thought about it, but I don't really know a ton or some of the details about it that may be able to help me make an informed decision. So the purpose is really to share with you all some things that I wish that I had known and thought through and when I moved into early intervention, and hopefully this will help you to have some of that information to be able to think through it and decide if it's right for you. So just to kind of go way back, you know, I started with adults in acute care and inpatient and outpatient and thought, oh, this is absolutely what I want to do. And then I realized the hospital never closes. And so for me, that was really challenging. And it's like one of those where it's, you know, we all have different pros and cons. And so for me, that was just a really big con. And I did not want to be working on holidays. So then I went to schools and went to elementary schools and love that because you do have built-in breaks. And it was so nice to know, oh, I don't have to hope I get that time off or to plan trips and to see friends and to do things that I'm interested in. So that was really great. And then I did that for about 5-6 years and started to have that feeling like I talked about in the beginning of what else do I want to do? Like I wasn't disliking the schools. It just felt like I needed to make a change at that time. And I'd had several friends and colleagues talk about early intervention. And I really was kind of like, that sounds interesting. So did some more research and started doing early intervention. And I did it just alongside my school job for a little bit. And then just finally said, okay, I want to do this full time. And I did that for a long time, like over 10 years. So really just got into it and then it just worked. So, you know, it definitely was not something that I thought about in the beginning, but when I did make that shift, it was worth it for so many reasons. But what I want to do is just kind of go through some things that I wish that I had known or thought through perhaps before. And hopefully it'll save you some of the time and energy that it took me to figure it out. So the first one is, if this is something you're considering doing, this obviously doesn't apply if it's something you're already doing, but it's really interesting how much the early intervention or EI system differs state by state. So I started it and I was in Illinois and I was there for, I did it for 2 years there. And then we moved to Colorado and I picked back up and continued to do it here. How those two states do it is so vastly different. So I would, and I didn't know that. So we moved to Colorado. I thought, oh, it's going to be the same as Illinois. Could not have been more different. So one of the big things you'll learn is that some states, it's like the Department of Education owns that birth through three early intervention piece, and others, it's completely separate. So for example, here in Colorado, where I'm at, every single county has its own what's called a community center board, and they handle all the early intervention services for that county. So even though I'm in the Denver metro area, I serviced three different counties, and all three of them did things just slightly different. So my advice for that is to go our friend Google and just to Google, how do I become an early intervention provider in, and if you can even give city or state, and most of the time that's really helpful. I tried it with a few states just to make sure, but really did break it down for what you need to know. And I know it sounds so simple, but I really wish that I would have looked into that more before making the move to Colorado. And then it was like, oh, wow, you know, trying to figure that out. And again, even the different counties, even though they were touching, may have done it differently. And I needed a separate contract for each county. So look into that beforehand. And the other thing that is worth looking into, which I did not think about, is some states, you have to be a Medicaid provider in that state if you're an early intervention provider, because they want you to utilize Medicaid funds if that child has Medicaid as their primary insurance. So I did that here in Colorado. And again, it was a process, but once you're in, and it's something that the more you can learn about and have a good understanding of before, the better you'll be. So how do I become an early intervention provider in fill in the blank state or city, and finding out what are the steps that you'll need to take within that state to become an early intervention provider. And again, for some of them, it's through the school district. So would you need to, or the Department of Education. So then would you need to become a full-time employee? Can you do it part-time? So all of those things are going to be really important. I knew here in Colorado that I could, every single county that you wanted to work in, you could have a contract with, but you were 1099 for all of them. So you're a contractor, which meant that that's why I was able to do it alongside my school system job, because I could take one, I could take five, or when I went full-time, I could take 20. So you have control over who, how many you take, when you take them. So check into that as well. The other things are, you know, just again, what training do you need? Because in Illinois, they did things differently, and I had to show that I had had so many years experience working with a specific population in order to become an early intervention provider at that time. If it's changed, I apologize. At that time, you had to, and you had to have a supervisor sign off that you had had that experience. Whereas in Colorado, I believe it's changed now, but when I started, I don't even think you had to prove that you'd had any, you know, if you had the SLP title you were in. So just finding out as well, like what are the requirements? What are the training? Because I know that several states are getting a little bit more specific about what that looks like. Okay. So, and then the last thing I'll say about that is if it is 1099, do not make the mistake that I made. And when you see, when they tell you, oh, this is what you're making an hour, I was thinking, yahoo, you know, have this hourly money coming in. And later to realize, oh no, part of that did not belong to me. That was belonged to the IRS. And so really having a very good understanding of 1099, what those, you know, quarterly estimated taxes, how much you're going to want to set aside and pretend like you never saw it, it's not yours. Yes, do not make the mistake that I made, because it was costly. And if you have a good understanding beforehand, you'll be better off. Okay. The next thing that is so important to think through is how large is the service area or the area that you would be providing services. So like I said, I worked with multiple counties. So I knew that though within a county, I may be driving between five different towns within that county. And some of them were 15 minutes apart, but then we had some that were 45 minutes away. So really looking to see, okay, what is that service area? And to determine what would be an average drive between families. Same with even urban areas. How large is that service area? You may be in an area like New York City and doing early intervention, but how long is it going to take you to get from point A to point B on public transportation? How long of a drive is it going to be? Once you get there, is it such where it's ample parking? Are you going to have to find parking and then walk to the house? So having a really good idea of that will help you tremendously, because that is something that can really burn you out in early intervention, is the driving, the sitting in the car. And the more you have a good understanding of that, the better off you will be. So even such where what I wish I had done a better job of at the beginning was to see, okay, what are the towns within that county? And then to just be very selective about, okay, I'm just going to take kids that are within these two areas because I know I can easily drive between the two of them. Now, I will say that doesn't always work out, because sometimes you're waiting for referrals to come in and you think, oh, I have three openings, and the next ones that come in all happen to be outside of that. So it's not a perfect science, but having a good idea of what that area is and what the average drive time or travel time is will help you be able to better plan what a day will look like, what a reasonable caseload will look like. So the other piece with that too is just thinking through, if you are in an area where you do have to drive, what kind of car do you have? Do you have a gas guzzler? Do you have something that's going to be better for gas mileage? And that is something I remember at one point in time when gas was so expensive, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I got to get rid of this car, because it goes into that overall cost of what you're spending. So although with 1099, you can write off mileage, however, it still can get really expensive. So just thinking through, do I have a car that's going to be able to be cost effective for me to drive all over the place if that's what I need to do? And hopefully that will just help with the planning of it all. The other thing, last thing I'll say is, what is traffic like in your area? And I know when I first moved to Colorado, there weren't that many people. Now there's a whole lot more people. And so traffic has just gotten to be so much, there's just more cars on the road, and it can really impact what used to be, oh, I used to be able to get from this town to this town in 15 minutes. Well, now that's 30. And so really, you know, when you start to look at that over the course of the day, it just adds a lot of time. So thinking through, where are the areas I'm willing to go? What is traffic like in those areas? And then, you know, how can that impact your scheduling throughout the day? And I always used to love when it was summer break, because there was just so the fewer cars on the road, and it was so nice. And then school would start again and think, oh, that's right, school's back. So traffic is definitely something to keep in mind when you're thinking through this.
We'll be right back to our interview. We just want to take a brief moment to shout out the company that makes this show possible, Med Travelers. If you are a therapist interested in traveling, visit medtravelers.com to explore the amazing benefits that Med Travelers has to offer. Featuring short and long-term contract opportunities at leading facilities across the country, with higher earning potential, W-2 employee status, and a flexible schedule, Med Travelers is your advocate for career success. Visit medtravelers.com to begin your travel adventure today. And now back to the show.
All right. So the next one is, I really liked this and thought it was a real pro, but I only say this not as a pro or con, but something to think about is, if you're thinking of making this shift, is you have a lot of autonomy. It is you going into the homes, working with the family and the child, and the key is it's you. So there are some times where it works out where I would co-treat with an OT or a PT, a mental health provider, but really and truly most of the time it was me. And so if you're somebody that needs to have those other professionals where you can go down the hall and ask a question, or, hey, I just want to pick your brain. Just think through, that may be challenging. On the flip side, that's the autonomy and it being just me. I will tell you, it transformed my clinical skills and my ability to just critically think through things quicker, problem solve. It really forces you in many ways to rely on yourself. And what it did teach me was, I remember when I first started feeling like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to wing it. I kept saying, I'm going to fake till I make it. But then I realized over time, I actually know this stuff and I actually know what I'm talking about and what I'm doing. And I think that just only continued to improve over time. So even when I went to another setting and wasn't doing early intervention, it really carried over where I felt like, hey, I got this. Yeah, I can figure this out. I know what I'm doing. So it is such where if you feel like you want to challenge yourself, you want to really grow professionally, it did that. It really did that. Even though there was times of discomfort, I haven't grown that much ever professionally, except, you know, that during that time, it was just like massive growth. So I would say that's a pretty positive, but again, it's all about knowing yourself. Also the, another piece that really did help a lot was that, you know, I was doing early intervention and was on my own, but I also found a team of other early intervention providers. And we would have a monthly meeting, whether it be a dinner or a happy hour, something where we would get together and even kind of got to the point where we did Zoom meetings or, you know, virtual get together where we just did a check-in or talked about difficult cases. So it did feel like I had that autonomy and a team as well. And that really helped me to find that balance. Because I did like that autonomy, but I do really like being part of a team, learning from my colleagues. So that was a nice balance is to find. And I know there's so many just online professional groups, even through social media, that also can give you that feeling of a team. But many of the organizations, whether it's the school district that employs you or the counties like I have, they would often have different teams that you could be a part of. So definitely seek that out. And don't rule it out if your initial thought is, oh, but I really like being around people. I like working. Don't rule this out because, again, I think you can really grow professionally, have that autonomy, and have a team. They just may not be down the hall from you. Okay. So the next one is, I remember finishing grad school and just that they always say, like, you've got to be adaptable. You've got to be flexible in this field. And they're exactly right. You do. And that goes for every setting, every population. It doesn't matter. However, in this setting, I found that I had to be more adaptable and flexible than many other settings. And I'll kind of talk through that. So you're going into people's homes. So, or sometimes it may be a daycare, but most of the time early intervention is really the home. So think about just even your own home and how if somebody was to come into your home and provide a service or do something, they're kind of walking into your world and your life. And, you know, how we do things and what happens is probably we kind of get used to it in a certain way in our home. But when you walk in there, it could be that you just don't really know what to expect. Who else is living in the home? Is there family visiting from out of town? Do they have siblings? How old are the siblings? Are they, you know, they were in school, now they're home, and it, you know, could be chaos. There could be their pets. It could be, a myriad of factors. And so, you know, I remember one time coming in, had my plans. I knew exactly what I was going to work on. And I get there and this family had several stressors, but never as many as the day I walked in already. And the family, several of the kids were sick
And dad had recently, since my last visit, been deported, and they had no electricity. So any plan that I had for that day was like, okay, we are not doing that. We need to figure out how to help this family in this moment. And that's an extreme example, but it is just a reminder that you're walking into their home, their life. And I always think it's a good idea to have a rough idea. You know what you're targeting with that child. But as far as having a very detailed plan and lesson, for many of our families, that's not going to work. Some it does, but many, you just need to have a general idea. So if you're somebody that feels like you really need a lot of structure, you really need to know, you put a lot of time into what you're doing, that's what you want to do, these are the outcomes, this could be challenging because that is not how this works most of the time. But I say that also as there's also some fun in that where there is a lot of spontaneity. You can, if you are somebody that likes to problem solve, think on your feet, think, okay, I was going to do this, but you know what? Now we're going to do this. Let's pivot. Then it really is, I almost want to say fun, because it really does help you to just think on your feet and go, as I say all the time, make like water. You're just going to go with the flow. And at the end of the session, as long as you're focusing somewhat on those goals, however that happened, great. Okay, I want to make sure I'm covering everything. So the other thing is, you just remembering that things can be derailed. You can just, and go in one direction, we're going to go in a different direction. But embracing it, embracing the chaos, I guess, is the way to put it. All right. The next one is, and I think this is key for any setting, but this is, again, I felt like this was so critical for my time in early intervention, is being a good communicator. Because again, it's you and that family. So some of the things that I learned that I really had to own and take on as being the primary communicator were around appointments, scheduling, because I'm telling you, and I do not fault these. I get it because I've dropped the ball many times myself with my own family, but there would be times where it's like every Tuesday at 9 o'clock for 6 months, I have been there. And then, there'd be those times where I'd get there and nobody's home. And you think, I'm here every Tuesday at 9. I don't understand. We all have moments and lapses that it's like, oh, I forgot it was Tuesday. So what I started doing, which helped tremendously with no-shows or cancels, was the morning of all my sessions, I would just send a text to each family. Let's say I was going to see 5 that day. Send a text. Hi, this is Jennifer. We have our session today at 9 o'clock. Please confirm that you'll be home and that's going to work for you. And I let them know that until I heard from them, I wasn't going to go out there. So they just knew. And then it just became part of the system. And that helped tremendously. But that's where I mean that, communicating, checking in. And I know sometimes it's so easy to get into that, well, they should own part of this. And I get it. I'm all about accountability. But I just felt like if I took over that piece of the communication and making sure we were on the same page about scheduling, it ultimately was worked out in my favor because I didn't drive all the way somewhere just to have somebody not be home. It was also great as well because I would let them know additionally that when I sent that message, let me know if anybody's sick and that if I shouldn't come, because more than once I would show up and they'd say, oh yeah, they threw up this morning. It's like, I don't want to be here. So yeah, it was a nice opportunity for them to share anything that may be helpful for me to know before arriving or deciding I'm not going to arrive. So I also, again, don't assume that people are going to remember, because even though you've got it in your head, depending on what's going on in their life, it just may be something that completely slipped their mind. So communication is key.
All right. The other piece that I had been doing this for a few years until it finally dawned on me, because I was thinking, oh my gosh, they pay so well in early intervention. You know, gosh, it's like, I can't believe they pay this much an hour. And then I started breaking it down. So the thing, and again, this will depend on your specific state, but for example, in my state, it was all 1099 contracts. So the good part, again, like I said, is that I could pick and choose how many, where I wanted to go. Nothing was dictated. Like, you will see, I could say, see the referral and say, oh, that's way too far. I don't want to do that. Or I'm not as familiar with that diagnosis. I'm going to pass. But the other piece of it is, you know, again, what you're looking at, that hourly fee, not all that money is yours. So I realized one day, I started breaking it down. That, let's just say $100 for ease. Let's say it's $100 an hour, 1099. And most of the time, that's that hour with the child. So it doesn't take into consideration planning time, paperwork time, writing notes, or driving. And so I really tried really hard to stick to certain areas. But like I said, there'd be times where I was like, oh, okay, fine, I'll just take those. They can't find anybody. Well, when I started to really break it down, it was like, okay, I'm driving 45 minutes each way, there for an hour doing this. And then it became where it really wasn't $100 an hour. It was, you know, $33 an hour. And again, that part of that wasn't even my money because I had to set it aside for the IRS. So the reason I say that is to just, again, I think it's really easy to look at something and say, oh, wow, this is how much it is an hour. But just really breaking it down to how much time is actually wrapped up into that hour. And that's also where you can ask, is there anything else that is covered? Is there anything else that's paid for? I know sometimes, I know for in my particular situation, any of our IFSP meetings were paid, but if I was writing a report or doing additional paperwork, that wasn't paid for. So definitely asking about that. And again, the mileage, that's where making sure that you're writing off that mileage or anything you can so that it does help a little bit with that overall time cost. I wish it was funny. I remember exactly where I was when it hit me. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not really making anything to see this child, because it was just such a drive that when I broke it down, I was like, okay, I've got to remember this. And that will also help you, again, planning that service area. If you can try to get kids as close as possible, then you can get from point A to point B in a quicker time period. All right, couple more. So the other piece, and I know we realize, we think about it, we're like, oh yeah, early intervention, I'm going into the home. Something to really, really think about is, I love parent education. I love working with the parents. I really feel like us are, you know, 30 minutes or 1 hour a week. And I was used to tell parents, I do not have a magic wand. So working with the people that are going to be with that child most of the time is, to me, where change happens. So I think that's great. And I really enjoy working with most all the parents. However, there are some times where it can be challenging. We've all done those, have been in those situations where you may be feeling challenged or somebody questioning something. And I always say that's a good thing. I want people to ask questions and to say, why are you doing what you're doing? Why are we doing this and not this? Because that's what helps us to, we want to be agile thinkers in that way. But that is sometimes where it can be challenging. And oftentimes, you know, you're working with families that do have a lot of stressors, or they're handling a specific diagnosis or life circumstance a certain way, and you may be on the receiving end. So just remembering that, especially in early intervention, it's a pair. You don't ever just work with a child. You're always going to work with the child and the parent. And just really keeping that in mind, because again, the parent's a critical part of that equation. And I know sometimes it can be challenging for different personalities or people that have had rough experiences in the past. So just remembering, for sure, especially in that setting, it is a package deal. But I found that the positives really outweighed the negatives in that situation. I also really, something that I learned after working with parents in the home that I really liked was, listeners, we all have been there where people say, "What are you? What are you doing? I don't know what that is. What do? You teach people to talk?" You know, we've all heard a million different guesses on what our profession does. And I found it to be a really great way to let the parents know, and it not in a formal way, but I'd say, okay, what I'm going to be doing right now is this, and it's going to look like I'm playing with them, but these are the things that I'm actually looking for from them. And you'll see that as we go through. And I felt like it really helped them to understand, oh, this is this age group. Cause I'd always say I can't sit down with a worksheet and do this with your 2-year-old. This is how they're going to learn and how I'm going to see what they're doing in doing what a 2-year-old's supposed to do. And so I found it to be really helpful in helping them see there's always a reason why we're doing what we're doing. And I would say that to the parents, like anything that I'm doing, I'm going to kind of just give you a quick heads up. This is what I'm looking for. This is why I'm doing it. But there always is a reason beyond what you actually see me doing. And so I really liked that and found that it helped educate the parents and even just then further into the community, because then the parent is armed with that knowledge and then can actually look at our profession as a, oh, I see what we see versus what's actually taking place can be two very different things. Okay. Next thing is your energy level. And I say this because this really is something to really think through and to know yourself better is, do this age group, it's a lot of energy and you've got to be on with them. Even more so I've found than with my older students, because they're little and it has to be fun and you want it to be engaging. And so there were times where I felt like a well-paid entertainer, a clown or something, but it was also fun because I have never done well where I can just sit all day. I need to be up. I need to be moving. And so I really enjoyed it. And I could tell when I had my own little kids and my energy was non-existent, it was harder for me to do that at the same time. So I will say that just knowing, you know, I have a very good friend who does this and she's extremely introverted and really has her social time, but definitely needs time to recharge. And so what she does is just plans her schedule accordingly. So where she knows, okay, I have a heavy day and then I may have a light day and then I'll break it up with a paperwork day. So knowing this about herself, she's able to do this, really enjoy it, do a great job, but she knows how to make her schedule so that she doesn't get burned out. So yes, high energy with these guys, but also can be really fun because you're not just sitting there at a desk. You're moving and grooving. It's never a dull moment. Okay. Last one is, creativity is key. And so that was my favorite thing about this age group in this setting. Again, they're not coming to your clinic where you've got everything set up or your room at school or wherever it may be. You're going into their home. And so it's not going to be this organized in the way that you would organize it. So this happens, then this happens, and this happens. It's not like that at all. But I liked it because I really liked to be able to say, okay, they're doing this. How can I meet them where they're at? And that is really what it taught me so much, is meeting these kids where they're at. This setting really hammers that idea into our heads. So, you know, an example would be if the child is crying because they wanted to go outside and play, and then here I am to take them away from their fun outside. So if it was possible, I'd say, let's just go outside and do work out there. And then whatever we're working on, again, the goal, I know what we're working on. How can we accomplish that outside? There's a ton of things that we can do. So that was always fun for me, is just on thinking on the fly. You have an idea of what you're working on. You know what your goal is with that child. So how can you accomplish it with what you're given? And so if you're creative, if you like thinking outside of the box, if you're like, oh gosh, you know, here is this ball of clay, let me sculpt it. It really was very fulfilling in that way, because I didn't feel like my thinking got stagnant. It always kind of kept me on my feet. But then that goes back to that energy part. There's definitely moments where you're like, okay, I'm tired now. But it was really fun to be able to think on my feet and say, okay, let's. And it also, I think, was a great model for those parents about how they could also incorporate it into just about anything. So that was something that I really enjoyed about it. And then the last thing I'll say is, if you are a resource, is the last thing I'm going to give you. If you are considering, or if you're in early intervention, I'm sure you know about this person. If you are not and want to learn more, or just are new to it, Laura Mize, her site is Teach Me to Talk. And I learned so much. That's what I would do, is driving to see families. I would listen to her podcast, and she's got books and courses, and I'm not getting anything at all to say this. I just learned so much from her, and just, it was very specific to early intervention that I was able to listen to, learn, and then start incorporating the next day. I was like, oh, this is awesome. So I really liked it too, because if I was feeling kind of stuck with a child or a situation, I felt like she would give these great pointers where I was like, oh, I can use that. So that's the resource I would give you. All right. I hope this was helpful, and I hope I saved you some of the mental headache of having to figure out some of this on your own. But really, if you are feeling kind of stuck or you need a change, absolutely look into this. Even if it's similar to what I did, where you can do a little bit on the side and just see if it's something you're going to enjoy, because I would have never thought about that as an option, and just felt like it was such a great joy and really a nice part of my professional life. So thank you, and so appreciate your time and listening, and I hope that you have a great rest of your spring, and talk soon.
And that wraps up this episode. Thank you for tuning into SLP Full Disclosure. For more information about this episode, check out the show notes on our website at medtravelers.com/SLP Full Disclosure. And don't forget to leave us a review and subscribe so you never miss a guest. Are you interested in becoming a travel SLP? Visit medtravelers.com to learn more and explore the exciting opportunities we offer at top-level facilities across the country. Also, a special thanks to Jonathan Carey for producing this episode, and Aiden Dykes for the music and editing. And as always, this episode was powered by Med Travelers. See you next time.